We live in a three-dimensional world, but most of our tools and research are geared around two-dimensional views. So what we've done in our project is begin to try to put together a lot of two-dimensional aspects of freezing tolerance into more of a three-dimensional picture. So we're using freezing tolerance, and we're looking at oats because it's the least freezing tolerant of the winter cereals. But of course, we want to eventually apply this to all winter cereals and in some of the things that we're looking at. So if you look at the improvement in winter hardiness, there has been some. Here you have Fulgham in the late 1800s, Norline 1960, and this is a line in Paul Murphy's breeding program at North Carolina State. So you see some progress. Freezing tolerance is incredibly complex. I'm not going to go through all these aspects of it, but suffice it to say there's interaction with all these aspects of freezing tolerance, making it about as complex, I'd say, as yield. So one of the things we have done, I appreciated Diane's talk earlier in this session about kind of redoing the paradigm. The paradigm for freezing tolerance has been for years to look at changes that a plant undergoes during cold acclimation. Well, it occurred to me a few years back that really cold acclimation is really kind of a misnomer because the plant doesn't know it's going to be frozen. It has no way of knowing that. It's really coming to equilibrium with the cold. So in that sense, cold acclimation should be thought of in terms of how is the plant adapting to the cold that it's undergoing, rather than how are these adaptations going to get it ready for freezing, because it doesn't know it's going to be frozen. In fact, a lot of times in the fall, after a cold period, it warms up. So a few ways of looking at the plant from a three-dimensional perspective. First of all, you have to see it in two dimensions. You look at the outside of the plant. How is it reacting to the stress that it's undergoing? And everything that goes on that we see on the outside, of course, we know, is a result of stuff going on the inside. So histological characterization, which is a two-dimensional view, and there's ways to quantify changes that plants are undergoing using stain technology in your histology. And I'll talk about that a little bit. And then how does the metabolism of the crown change over time during recovery from freezing? So what we're trying to do is look at, rather than how the plant changes up to freezing, is look at it like from a pathology point of view. And Diane's talk, again, emphasized this in a really nice way. In pathology, you infect the plant with the pathogen, and then you see how does it react to that stress. So we're trying to do that with freezing now, is rather than look ahead of time, impose the stress, and then how does the plant adapt to it, and we call that post-freeze metabolic reprogramming. And then finally, what we're trying to do once we discover or try to figure out some of this metabolic activity and some of the staining is apply that in a 3D visualization, which I'm going to show you some of the things that we've started doing. I'm going to skip that slide for now. If you look at a plant, like I said, what we see going on the outside is an indication of what is happening on the inside. And this is a great example of a field plot. Here they're kind of hard to see. You can see them a little better there. You see little green shoots popping up out of these dead plants, or they look dead. But they're not dead because there's something going on inside of them. So we pulled some of these lines into a controlled study, and I want to take a look at this particular plant here. And let's make sure this works. Okay, here we go. I need to pause it here. If you look at this plant, you notice these are three tillers of oat. This is the primary tiller here, and you notice it's dead. Looks dead. This is a secondary tiller, and it's growing like crazy, okay? And this is the tertiary tiller, and it's also growing like crazy. But if you look at this, let's see if I can do this. We'll advance just a couple of frames. Look at that tiller that was dead, or you thought it was, and off to the side you see another shoot coming up out of this tiller that you thought was dead. On the other hand, you see this tiller that you thought was alive, and it in fact has died, and it will not grow a new tiller. This kind of underscores the problems with things like assaying freeze damage by electrolyte leakage, because if you'd have tested those individual tillers using electrolyte leakage, you would have assumed that that secondary tiller was alive when actually it was dead. So what's going on inside of this? Inside of this plant. Okay. If you look at it at day 17, you look at the three tillers. Here's your primary tiller. Remember, the main primary tiller has died. The apical meristem, which is this region over here, this is a cross-section histology of the inside. This is the apical meristem. The dark red denotes dead tissue. And this is kind of wrinkled up, and it looks like there's some tissue that is alive but kind of non-functional. This is the tiller over here on this side that was killed. And this is the tiller, or the side shoot coming up of this tiller here, and it's alive and functioning. And this is the tiller over here that never really was killed at all. So this is the part of the plant we're looking at. This is the crown, apical meristem up here, and it's the above ground portion of the stem, essentially. Roots down here. This is a longitudinal section through the center of the crown. These are all the vessels of xylem, phloem, parenchyma intertwined in here. The red staining stuff is the xylem. Now you look at a comparison longitudinal section again. This is the same image. Notice the apical meristem in the frozen plant and the damage that you see. The dark red again is damaged. This is a very interesting to us, and we're trying to concentrate on this. It looks like some kind of a barrier separating this dead tissue from the live tissue. And so we looked at it under fluorescence and saw there's a lot of autofluorescence going on. Here's this barrier that I talked about. These are oats, barley, wheat, and rye, all frozen at minus 12. And you see dead apical meristem in all of them except rye, which is the most freezing tolerant, if you'll recall. Wheat, you see some live tissue in here, but you have this one main one apical meristem of one tiller. These are the tillers coming up out of this longitudinal tissue. In rye, you see three live apical meristems. If you freeze wheat at minus 14, of course, you expect more freeze damage, and in fact, you have a second apical meristem killed here, and there's some damage here, but not a whole lot. And then in rye at minus 16, you see a frozen apical meristem, but interestingly, over here at the side is a bud that's surviving. So that's what we saw in oats, you know, that bud coming up off to the side of the tiller that looked dead. That's the same thing that happens in rye. If you take a look at oats over time, freezing after it's frozen, you see an unfrozen, very little, if any, autofluorescence. We had to turn the light up quite a bit, so some of this red is really kind of an artifact because there wasn't really enough to light up to make it a good image. So we turned the light up, and then this red showed up. 0 day, you begin to see the apical meristems here and here beginning to die. At 1 day, you see this one is dead, and this barrier here now is beginning to show up even at 1 day. At 3 days, here's a tiller that looks like it may survive. We won't know yet. There's some damage up in here. Here's two apical meristems that are killed. In fact, here's a bud that was killed here. Day 7, where we see the maximum of this barrier, you see two very prominent meristems. This is the primary meristem of this tiller that had been killed, and you see these two surviving tiller. We don't know whether they're surviving or whether that's new growth after freezing. We suspect that's what's happening, is that when it's killed, there's a signal sent to cells in the, we call this the transition zone, to, hey, you know, I'm dead. You better take over. we suspect that's what's happening. So we wanted to find out, what is this barrier? This is our first attempt at looking in a three-dimensional view of what's going on in the plant. If you look at the a frozen plant, you have the barrier here is red, and with Sigma Scan, we have the ability to quantitate. It's a piece of software that, if you're familiar with, it will recognize whatever color you tell it to, and then quantitate the pixels of that. Okay, so here it's recognizing the red, which we're calling freeze damage, and here you have it recognizing the green, which we're calling unfreeze damage, which is not really true because we suspect that this tissue in here is damaged. It just happens to be the same color. But at any rate, you can add these two together and you get the entire, all the tissue, and then you divide the whole, all the pixels that the software gives you by, or you divide only the red by the total and you get a percentage of the red. And I'm going to skip this for now. Oops, it clicked it. I don't want to do that. Okay. If you now, this is a single plant going one section at a time from the very bottom of the plant up to the top of the plant in cross section. Okay, we do cross sections, we quantitate the color in each section, and then you can get a graph here of this. And this is the area staining red on the y-axis, and this is the section going up. So if you take just the red, this is the top of the plant up in this area. This is a longitudinal picture of what we're looking at. So in this region here, you have, I don't know, maybe 50 or 70 sections that you slice through the top, and then you get down to here, the transition zone in here where a lot of this barrier is another maybe 50 or 60 sections slicing through here. And this is what we call the crown core. And this is the lower crown with your areas, you know, with your areas down here. If you take these areas, each of these sections is 0.025 millimeters thick. So you can multiply the area times the height, or the diameter, I mean, not the diameter, the area times the height, and you get a volume. So for each section, you can calculate a volume, and then if you add them up, you get a total volume. Essentially, what you're doing is you're integrating all the area under this curve here, and you can calculate how much total red staining tissue there is in a plant. This is a single plant. So if you do it with a bunch of plants, over time, this is what you get. The frozen, you see a significantly higher red staining area volume in these plants than you do in the non-frozen, which is not really unexpected. It's just kind of interesting. And what was most interesting about this is the lack of, or the low variability, the low plant-to-plant variability we found in this total red color. When you normalize it on a percentage basis, it's very, very consistent plant-to-plant. It was kind of surprising to us. I thought we'd be all over the map with that. So what is this red staining stuff? Well, we wonder. Here it is in oats. It fluoresces in rye as well, but it's down in this area of the plant. And so now we begin to see how important it is to look at what's going on inside the plant in three dimensions, because these are two-dimensional views of what's going on. So is this, in fact, the same stuff that's in oats, but it's in a different part of the plant, maybe where ice formation begins initially, and it has the ability to protect the whole plant in a much better way than it does in oats? Well, that's just pure speculation. We don't know. We're just starting in on this. So we've done some metabolomics analysis, and I won't go into the protocol here. Cynthia Henson's lab out in University of Wisconsin at Madison did this work, and we looked at all these. Is that impressive to you? That's what that slide is for. It's one of those, you know, gels that shows 1,000 little bands. Come on, you guys. It's supposed to. Anyway, moving on. These are the compounds out of those that showed a significant difference over time during recovery from freezing. and showed some kind of a pattern, either an increase or a decrease. So we took those. Now, we just got this data last week, so I didn't have a chance to look through and see what all these did. But when you graph those out, the change in ion count over time, we divided it into three groups. The high ion count, in other words, there's a lot of this stuff in these tissues. We see at minus one, this is the cold acclimated plant. Okay, zero is a frozen plant that's 0 days after freezing, meaning that's right when it came out of the freezer. Day one is really the first day of recovery, if you will. So really the change, we're interested in the changes that go on from day one to day seven, and then maybe even up to day 10, we're not sure. But these four compounds changed, I should say, over time in a kind of an interesting pattern. Like I said, we're not sure exactly what all these do at this point. Lactic acid was kind of interesting. These are the medium ion count. Lactic acid was interesting because it went way up in the frozen plant, suggesting that this is evidence that we have an anaerobic condition. Lactic acid, as you know, is produced under anaerobic conditions. I mean, that's not surprising, but it was an interesting find. It kind of confirmed our protocol. And then you see the low ion count compounds. Even though these are low ion counts, they were still highly significant in their changes over time. So we still want to look at those. So here is, we took, here we finally get to the real 3D aspect of this. We took 180 images that were stacked, that 180 images that were done in cross-section that we had quantitated the barrier change in barrier, and we stacked them up in Adobe After Effects. Now, you've got to understand, these are JPEG images that were taken individually on a microscope. You cannot build 3D models from JPEG images. You can't do it. They won't. Two JPEG images won't talk to each other like two vector-based images, which is what they're doing in a lot of medical research now. So it was really quite a feat. We hired a graphics guy to teach us how to do this. Evidently, they've been doing stuff kind of like this in visual effects in movies for years. And so we just use some of the same software. So, I did it wrong. Stop. Okay, let me back up. All right, I'm supposed to click this. All right, here we go. So here you see these are three tillers. If it'll play, come on. These are three tillers. Oh, okay, and those are the roots at the bottom, showing you the size. It's really jerky, I apologize. That's the freeze damage inside the plant. That's that barrier region that I showed you in two dimensions a little bit ago. And these are the vessels coming up into the stems, the kind of the pokey things coming up. That's moving in a little closer. I tell you, this played so smoothly on my Mac. I'm just lucky that I got it to work on a PC. I apologize. Now, this is the dead tissue within the barrier inside. And there's a bunch of, once you look at a plant in three dimensions, the inside of a plant in three dimensions, I'm telling you, you cannot look at your subject the same way anymore. My wife understands freezing tolerance better today. She's a music teacher. She understands it better today than I did 3 or 4 years ago before we could do this. I want to show you, just to show you how versatile this technique is. This is a plant conference, but this is part of the liver of a woodchuck, and this is a tumor inside the liver. This is the dead portion of the tumor here. This that was killed by a vet, John Cullen, a vet at North Carolina State. And this is the live portion of the tiller. So when you do this with this, let's see, this one actually plays a little better. These are 60 sections taken. These actually weren't even taken in a microscope. These were just sections were rather large, and we put it on a light table. Now you show the yellow is the live portion of the tumor. The blue is the dead, and that empty spot there in the middle is where they stuck the probe to kill the tumor. So you see there's still portions of the tumor that are alive. And that just gives you an idea of what we can do there. Now let me just show you one more thing, how it wants to play it all the way through. Okay, well, let's let it go. So this is just the dead part of the tumor, and it allows them to look at the interface between the dead and live tumor. What we want to do, and it wants to play it over and over and over, this technology is best suited for tissues at the size of biopsy. So we're going to start working with some. Now, this is a CT scan of my lungs, my chest. I took them, and I thought, hey, let's try it on this. So these are the scans stacked up, and that's actually my chest. You see there? That was a little bizarre doing this and looking at this on the computer. These are the lungs coming out here. And, you know, I just was interested, either kind of the spiral, that's where the ribs are. It looks like the lungs are filling in spaces between your ribs. If you were a medical person, you'd say, ah, no big deal. They can do this with a CT scan and an MRI. You can do computer tomography. But you cannot do it on a plant. You cannot do it on a biopsy of a cancer or a neoplastic tumor, which is a tumor just beginning. So these are the blood vessels in the lungs. So anyway, that's just to show you the versatility. We can really use this. You could use it in anything you want to look at in plants in a three-dimensional aspect. I don't really have any conclusions because we're just starting on this, and maybe in a year or so we'll have some interesting conclusions for you, but that's it.
Thank you, David. Maybe a session with